my gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out an all-point bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
Government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Welcome, 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 welcome. Hello, 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 hello. As I turn up my headphones to another exciting, nearly not show of the Dutch Jones radio program. It is 5:01 p.m. on January 20th, 2011, and we are under attack again. Our UBroadcast server will not let us sign in, will not let us transmit, and I had to, at the last minute, about 20 minutes ago, this was discovered, and we sent out emails. So those of you that are here now, thank you. You're probably listening on the DutchJones.info page, and if you want to chat, you have to sign in on, what is this called now? Ustream, as Lewis yawns at me. Don't yawn at the announcer. Never, never yawn at the announcer. And we will probably start using this one more often. UBroadcast has been nothing but a pain. We're paying for it, and we are not getting any response on customer service. The same thing happened yesterday, plus I had migraines, and we couldn't sign in. It wouldn't let us transmit. It's just more and more problems, and we're paying a pretty good amount to stay on there. Right now, Ustream is free, as far as we know, right, Lou? You were supposed to research it. What's it cost for you? For how many listeners?
I think unlimited. Yeah. I couldn't find anyone.
Yeah, so this may be the way to go. Save us that fee every month for UBroadcast. They do record, and they do... We've done this once before, haven't we, Lou? You can't hear him because he doesn't have a microphone. We're set up today. Today is Thursday, which means it's Practical Christianity Day at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, when Pastor Warren Mark Campbell will come in and share with us the separatist Christian worldview and on starting a covenant community using the militia and people around you and doing all that kind of good stuff. Now, we spent the day trying to get our emergency services volunteer group up and running. When I say it's already up and running, but we're just trying to reach out to the local authorities to let them know we're here. And I made several phone calls, one face-to-face, and, well, the potential is good. The potential is good, and I encourage you to do this. I found out who our disaster services person was and stuff like that. So we're doing good, and we're really glad that they're out there, these firemen in the area. I don't have anything against local firemen. But I made some calls, and they were like, well, we just started doing that, too. We're really excited, and we decided. I said, well, I haven't heard anything about it here in our little community. Oh, we told your foundation. We have a foundation, not like a committee. We're not incorporated. So there's some people that are on it, and I had mentioned it several meetings ago that we needed to. And this is funny because when I contacted the state coordinator and the county coordinator, they both, all of them said, we're on our own. Don't count on FEMA. Don't count on the fire department. Definitely don't count on the sheriff's department to do anything in a disaster. You're on your own. And it was hilarious. The firemen didn't know anything about the program, sir. They were a young guy. But when I called the bureaucrats, they were all excited that I knew the terms and could throw out the phrases and stuff like that. So that was great. They were really excited. What's going on? We got more people coming in or people leaving? We got people leaving, don't we? Hey, Border Guardian, welcome. Welcome, Border Guardian. I'm not sure who's who. You guys are going to have to come up with. You can use the same old usernames that we had over on UBroadcast. Twinkle Toes is in there. Border Guardian must be Lane. Lane, you, of course, the phone. Let me make sure. I shouldn't say this. I don't know if it's hooked up. Let me see here. Yeah. Yeah, the phone's hooked up, Lane. If you want to call in a couple minutes, that's fine, and give us some updates on the trial. As always, we enjoy covering that. We enjoy covering survival stuff, biblical stuff, the Christian separatist worldview here at Stronghold Radio. it'll change. The message will change, but the foundation never changes. We're relying on our Lord, our King, Jesus Christ. And we're going to do some Romans 13 stuff today, and I left my Bible in the car, but I know there's got to be a Bible here somewhere. I'm in a Christian... Stop yawning, Lou.
I can't.
How can you possibly be tired? I let you sleep till 9:30 again. I'm letting him sleep late just to prove to him that it's not the fact that he needs sleep. It's just the fact that he's lazy. Although he was doing some dog training. Do we have a Bible around here somewhere, honey? Speaking of the dog coming in. Stacy just came in with the dog. I need a King James Bible. I want to talk a little bit about Romans 13, the stuff we were going over at lunch. The misinterpretation of Romans 13. Last night we learned about Connecticut and Rhode Island. You know that Connecticut, its license plate says the Constitution State. I was always like, well, I thought that was Pennsylvania. Connecticut was the first region to have its own constitution. In fact, even up till 1776, the Crown didn't argue with them and left them alone. She's even looking it up for me. Romans 13, and set it down here.
I just don't understand how can anyone
misinterpret it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because so many of the sheep want to take Romans 13 and say, oh, we've got to obey all dictators.
Actually, that's not what it means.
Yeah, it's not what it means. So set it down there. Set it down there for now. Where is it?
Here.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you got...
It's the King James.
Yeah, but I don't know if I can read it.
Oh, well, that's the only one.
Yeah, that's fine.
Fine.
But we're going to get into that in a little bit. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about what's going on up here. I want to remind you guys, anyone that's can get here, the ladies, we have a February... What's going on? Okay, a February 5th ladies-only training class. We just had two more added to it. We have a limit of 14, and I think we're up to 7 or 8 now. It's $90 for one day up here. We're right where it's going to be done is right next to the... Is it Chuck Chancey?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Get him away from these cables. Oh. Chuck Chancey Casino. You could stay there. If you look up Chuck Chancey Casino, you know, outside of Fresno, it's actually Coarse Gold. Coarse Gold, as in coarse, as in rough to touch. And then DF training, the links are on our page. February 5th, you got to be there at 9 a.m., but you got to let us know you're coming. We don't want like 30 people showing up, and poor Rudy will be like, hey, wait a minute. But you're going to get the Dutch Jones discount. You'll get the Church of Cahuilla discount if you go through me. Normally it's $150, $200 a day. We're doing it. We've arranged this for $90. You need to have a pistol, a holster, a magazine holder for two magazines extra, or if you have a revolver, the quick clips, whatever you call those, the quick loaders, and you have to have 150 rounds of ammunition. This is a more of a theory and intro class. This is to get people very comfortable with their weapons. We have some advanced people taking it, and we have some novices that have never really fired anything before. I see Twinkle Toes is in the room, Twinkle Toes 9mm. I hope you're listening, because remember that, February 5th, $90. You'll probably need to bring your own lunch. Where they're at, there is no snack bar. You're not going to be able to run to the casino. Afterwards, you might be able to. Maybe the ladies will go gamble. Are you guys going to go gamble? Play bingo or keno or whatever? She's like, I don't know. I may go with them. I don't know if I like the thought of all of our women going alone with a bunch of guns somewhere. I may have to follow them sneaky and keep an eye on them. But we can do that. But it's supposed to be ladies only. Lou's not. Are you cold, Lou?
Yeah.
Why don't you bring a jacket up? You can go get a jacket. Go get a jacket. I brought my jacket, and I'm not cold. Stacy's got long, mom's got long sleeves. Go get a jacket on. Take your headphones off. It looks weird. He's got his shirt wrapped around him like a diaper, and his arms pulled in. He looks like he just survived a major car crash and doesn't have any limbs or anything left. So, just go get your jacket, and I don't want you getting sick because you got a ton of work to do. Getting back to our line on the cert thing, excellent news, excellent news. We found out that if we associate ourselves with the local fire department, which I have no problem doing that, and get them to say, hey, yeah, they're doing a real training, we'll get 40 training kits, enough gear for 40 people. Let me see what this is here. Hello, who do we have? Hello? Okay, great, now I can't hear anybody. Are you there? Let me crank you way up. Now go ahead. Our correspondent in Arizona, and I want to talk about that email you sent me about needing help too after we talked to you, so don't hang up, okay? Go ahead, Lane, what do you got for us? Hmm. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it might change your perception of people when you're around criminals all day and guards all day, and then you see regular everyday folks, you may get your hopes raised just because they seem a little more civil. Sure. Right. Yeah, she looks like a Godfather type, you know, Dawn. Wow. Modifiers for death sentence. Well, like what the guys south of the border do to their own people, the torturing. Yeah. Sure. Good. Good. I've heard a couple things that were unrelated. I mean, they're not mentioning Shauna in the major media at all, but I heard Rush Limbaugh this morning referring to Dupnik as Sheriff Dipstick and just tearing into him and just tearing into him. And then I heard a piece of audio where Dipstick was railing on the media for giving out his email address and phone number and driving him nuts. And everybody I listened to, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, said, we didn't give out any of his information. As far as I know, we were the only ones that gave out any information. Not that we had that kind of effect, but I'd love to think that we had enough people to shut down his computer and make him turn off his phone. Okay, hang on, guys. We're having a problem here. They cannot hear Shauna, and there's no reason why... okay, hang on. Or not Shauna, I'm sorry. Thank you, Mary. Hang on, guys, here. We're not... yeah, this stinks. Let's see how you hook this up. Okay, you've got return to send. Standby, everybody. So they're not hearing anything you're saying, even though I'm hearing it in my headphones. No, because I hear you fine. It's something that's going on with the phone conversation. Let's plan on you calling back tomorrow after I can take this board apart and hook it back up. Everything is showing that it's sending. Let's see, that does it. I don't know. If it's changed at all, folks, let me know, because I did push a button that said tape to mix. Yeah, I already did that, but this is coming in. This doesn't make any sense. The aux sends, the FX sends. It doesn't make any sense. Because I hear you fine, and they can't. I'm not hearing anybody saying that they can hear you. So why don't we do this, Lane, give us a call back tomorrow. I promise to have this fixed. We'll have to repeat it. I want you to put your call out tomorrow that you need help with some areas of this cause, and we can do that tomorrow. Okay, great. Thank you very much. Bye. That's really weird because watch this. Yeah, it's not going out at all. You broadcast is up. Check you broadcast. We may be switching over to you broadcast here, because I got to figure out what Lou did here with the phone. So stand by. Let's see. Make sure you hook these up right. You probably did. It's not that hard to hook this.
Get into you broadcast.
Okay, get into you broadcast. Okay, guys, we're going to switch back over to you broadcast. Actually, just do them both at the same time. Do them both at the same time. Let me make sure that you hook this up right here. Why don't you go start playing? I thought you tested the phone, Lou.
I did.
You did. You tested it and it went out over the air?
Mm-hmm. And FX send. Okay, and then this one. Take down my mic. Listen to some music for a while, folks. We'll be right back. When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
And we are back. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. Please bear with us. We're having all kinds of technical difficulties today. Yesterday we had computer problems and all kinds of maniac stuff. Mary's not hearing anything on either. Are we streaming out? Can you hear us? Can anybody else hear us? You don't have a headset. Well, just turn it on and see if you're hearing. I want to make sure we're streaming audio. Okay, as long as we can be heard on something. Now, Lane, are you still there? I see Border Guardians in there. Are you there, Lane? You can call in now. We found out what was wrong with the phone. Somebody hooked it into right channel instead of left channel, and we are mono. Okay. Yeah, refresh whatever you're listening on. So, folks, yeah, just bear with us. This is Guerrilla Broadcasting. This is a nice little test for Lewis. Next time he has to set everything up, maybe he'll learn from these lessons and making sure he double-checks everything. Go ahead. Hit record. See, he forgot to hit record, but he caught himself, so that's good. So we're going to do the best we can. We're going to do the best we can with what we got. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. We're 21 minutes into the broadcast. We've been bumped off of U Broadcast. We're back on. We're broadcasting on Ustream as well. Now, you can, let's see here. You can do all kinds of stuff. People are saying they can't hear. Can't hear what? Let me do this. Yeah, so I don't know what you guys are talking about. I am and me. When was that? Five? Oh, that was probably the phone call. So, Lane, if you're still there, go ahead and call in, and they want to hear your side of the conversation. So it was just – it was a perfect storm of stupid mistakes plus technical mistakes. But we are up and broadcasting now, and I am glad to say that I'm not going to get in the chat room on you broadcast. I'm going to stay in the chat room over here. Where am I? Making sure I'm here. Okay, I see Freedom. I don't know who that is, but welcome. I like the handle. I appreciate people taking the time to sign up. We're going to probably use both of these streams for a while and then maybe switch over because we get zero customer service from UBroadcast. UBroadcast has been really good. I just had somebody ding in. What was that? Oh, here we go. Mike's telling me. Yeah, the other side of the phone call. So we're going to try. I need somebody to call in. I'm going to give you the phone number. I need somebody to call in. Tell me how great I am. 559-561-8225. 559-561-8225. Dutch is a little depressed. Dutch, everything's going wrong. Everything's messing up. Nothing's working. Everybody's letting me down. I need somebody to call up and tell me I'm wrong. I need to shut up, buck up, and keep going. And I said buck up, B-U-C-K. I do want to talk more about it. It was great to hear Rush Limbaugh slamming, I keep wanting to say Commander Dipstick, Sheriff Dupnik. And just because this guy, every time he opens his mouth, Dupnik, he just says something stupid. He's going on and on now about health care and everything. Like he's suddenly just wonderful, you know, that he knows everything. And he's probably applying for another political office, him and his toupee. I keep saying toupee, and I can't remember even what he looks like. Maybe he doesn't have a toupee. Was it a comb-over? Somebody call in now and tell me, was it a comb-over or toupee on Dupnik? I don't know. Are you hearing anything yet? That's really weird. Some people can hear, some people can't. Okay, here we go. Obviously, hello.
Hi, Dutch. It's Lane.
Okay, let me bring it up again. Go ahead again.
Hi, Dutch. It's Lane.
Hello, Lane.
I had no idea you were so sensitive.
I am. I'm a very sensitive little lad.
Oh, wham.
So, yeah, we nobody heard anything you said. It all went in my headphone, but that was as far as it got. Why don't you tell us about Shauna, and I'm going to pretend like I'm going to go, we're just going to do take two, and let you start with about talking about her newfound hope in a jury selection.
Okay, yeah, I heard from her yesterday. They started asking jurors questions yesterday, the 19th, asking them questions in person, and she, of course, was in the courtroom because it's her case. She said that she actually has quite a bit of hope that she will get an unbiased jury.
Great.
They're asking the jurors the right kind of questions. They're receiving answers. She said those jurors who are prejudiced are actually dismissing themselves.
Wow.
She did use a jury consultant. Her defense team, excuse me, used a jury consultant, and that probably made a lot of difference. She said she's She thinks she may get a fair trial. Of course, you know, the jury's only part of the equation. The other two parts of the equation are her defense, the prosecutor, and the judge is very important. And in this particular case, we know the judge has a habit of making rulings in favor of La Raza.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that's going to go. I hope he will treat her fairly. I mean, the woman could lose her life if he doesn't.
Yeah.
She said she's really happy with her defense team. She's doing a very good job. When they went in, the prosecutor was trying to act like...
Hello?
Her. I'm still here.
Okay, go ahead.
She said the prosecutor was trying to make the jurors believe that the charges against her, like she was a trigger woman or something like that, and those were never the original charges.
No.
Just charged with being the mastermind who planned the murder of a whole family of four people she didn't even know. I mean, come on, when was the last time a hairdresser who was the mother of two children planned a mass murder, execution style, of a family of four people she didn't know? Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, you know, this isn't television, this isn't Stepford Wives, this isn't, you know, some movie of the week. I was trying to think Stepford Wives. What's the one where the Housewives show that's on now where they're killing people and stuff? Anyway, Desperate Housewives. Thank you, Stacey.
Wives of Beverly Hills.
Yeah, all that garbage. This is reality. And, you know, Dupnik, you know, he's just going to play this as much as he can, and maybe he's losing some of his, losing a lot of his oomph now.
You know, Dupnik has just been savaged by the people on the right. Michelle ripped him a new one. Rush Limbaugh's ripping him. And the last email that I got, which I will forward to you, is that there's a group of people planning a demonstration for next week to fire Dupnik. They're going to demonstrate in front of the sheriff's office in Tucson.
That would be fantastic. I think that would
partiers.
Be...
And I've got to tell Shauna about that, because I know she's going to be thrilled to hear about that.
I think that would be great. That would be great. But if you know, it's funny, because obviously you've been at this a long time, and, you know, you contacted us before this shooting thing went happening. We knew he was a nut from just a little bit I read and researched before we had you on the first time. And now the rest of the world's starting to go, what's up with that sheriff? You know, what are these things he's talking about? I mean, he's making comments on socialism and the Republican Party and Bush. It has every, you know, like Rush said today, he's making comments about things beyond his pay grade, and it's making him look like an idiot.
Well, even the Arizona Republic in Phoenix, which tends to be left-leaning but is tending to become a little bit more conservative as they've seen that they've been losing readership, has said in an op-ed piece, I believe in the last couple of days, that Sheriff Dupnik is exceeding his authority. He's not acting as a professional lawman, and he should not be talking about things he knows nothing about.
Yeah.
They're even ripping him a new one. Everybody's ripping Dupnik a new one. I think his time is past. I think he's had his 15 minutes of fame. He's 74 years old now. I can only hope that he will resign prematurely or just leave office when his term expires. I shudder to think of him being reelected. It's really scary.
Well, hopefully, you know, usually what happens is they promote him up. I mean, maybe he'll run for governor now.
Well, I have something. Did I tell you yesterday that Pima County Sheriff's Office sent two detectives 3 weeks ago up to the prison in Washington?
Yeah, you did. You did.
Tell anybody about Shauna?
Yeah, the 12th hour, you know, 23rd hour, however you want to look at it, you know, Hail Mary to get more info.
I know. That's absolutely unbelievable. And that's, you know, that is really a very telling thing about how desperate they are to try and make their case against her. Now, I've been on this assignment, Dutch, for a year and a half. I mean, literally a year and a half. Shauna and I have stuck with each other. You know, we've done the hard route. It's been difficult for both of us. Imagine trying to get to know somebody you don't really know while they're in jail and outside.
Yeah.
It's real difficult. So, I mean, at least now I have a track record. So, one of the other things she said to me, too, is that she was very happy that her lawyers took some things off the table. As I said, the prosecutor started out trying to convince the jury, or the prospective jury, that Shauna was the mastermind. And Now she said they took a couple of things off the table. It's more like she's being charged as an accessory.
Yeah, which is a there's no death penalty in that as far as I can see.
Yeah, I can't really speak to that or what the potential penalties might be, but she said they also tried to get cruel. I think they got cruel and heinous taken off the table, which is one aspect that requires a death penalty or a death penalty trial requires that the crime be cruel and heinous. And as I said before, when the people were shot, they were shot to death, they were shot in the face, they were shot in the chest, it was bang, 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 bang. It was over with. Well, cruel and heinous, unfortunately, has never been defined in the Arizona revised statute. So now everybody's kind of, well, what is cruel and heinous? Most people would think cruel means the people suffer.
Yeah, yeah.
They're made to
torture, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So Shauna's lawyer brought that out at the December 21st, 2009 probable cause hearing, which, by the way, was nothing but a dog and pony show.
They usually are, actually. It's just, you know, grinding the gears of justice.
Yeah, the outcome was predetermined. The judge knew how he would rule. All the defense attorneys knew how he would rule. They knew they would lose.
Yeah.
But they all protested vigorously to be seen doing their jobs and earning their billable hours.
Yeah, it's just a show. It's all drama now to make it look like they're doing what they're supposed to do. Now, I received an email from you, and I forwarded it to a bunch of people, that you are looking for volunteers for the Shauna Ford cause, the Free Shauna Ford cause.
Right.
Would you like to address that now, the kind of things you're looking for?
Yes.
What type of volunteers?
Absolutely. Money. We need money.
Yeah.
Folks, I mean, I know this kind of goes without saying, but the bottom line is Shauna's got maybe a maximum of 2 more months. We are at the end here. She needs about $100 a month so she can make phone calls, talk to people on the outside, write letters, buy envelopes and stamps. They make her buy everything in there. They don't even give them hand lotion. Do you know how dry it is out here in the desert?
Yeah, I do.
Man, it is freaking dry. And if you're a white woman and you have dry skin like a lot of us do, I mean, your hands are going to crack and bleed in the winter if you don't have some kind of hand lotion. That's one example of the kind of thing that she needs. They make her buy her own clothing. They don't even give her socks. They don't give her a sweatshirt in the winter so she can stay warm. I mean, they make her buy socks, and she's told me she's been through several pairs of socks.
Yeah, they're not the greatest socks in the world either that they're selling.
Oh, no, of course not. Mm. They sell El Cheapo.
Yeah.
El Cheapo in Tucson, Pima County. Imagine that.
Right.
So the other thing that I'm looking for is people who want to demonstrate or who want to, you know, spread the word, tell their friends, demonstrate in public, attend the trial. That's real important to show some kind of support for Shauna. You don't have to come wearing a Free Shauna Ford T-shirt, which we have some of, by the way, and I'll put a picture up on the website.
Okay.
Selling T-shirts. So if people want to buy a T-shirt, they can do that, too. That'll help. But anybody who wants to help, like, for example, one of the things that I need to have done that I simply don't have time to do is I need to have email addresses harvested for all the major media in Tucson, in Arizona, and national. I need to have email addresses to send press releases to. And if somebody already has an address of something, has a list of addresses, that would be real helpful. Or names and phone numbers of reporters who might be interested in talking to me about Shauna Ford and her case. I need that stuff. But to go out and go to all the websites and harvest the emails is like a day or two job. And I have other things that I'm higher priority right now. So some clerical work would be helpful. I actually do have a musician friend right now who's working on a theme song for Shauna.
Great.
So I have a musician friend who lives in L.A., and I've known her a number of years. She's incredibly talented, and she agreed to write something. So hopefully before too long, we may have something on the website.
Yeah.
I probably could use a webmaster because we on our website, we're not professional. We're all volunteers here. Nobody gets paid any. So we need a webmaster that maybe can tell us how to put a song on there once this is up, once it's ready.
Mm-hmm.
stick it on the website so that when somebody opens the page, it starts playing. I don't know how to do that.
Okay.
How to do that.
Well, you people are listening. If you know anybody, this is going to replay. Now, how do they get in touch with you? What's the best way to contact you?
They can email webmaster@justiceforshaunaford.com. Okay. They can simply call the Shauna hotline number, and that's right on the website. I believe it's on the home page. Of course, now, I'm not looking at it right now.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
I don't have it memorized, but, you know, we do get the phone calls. It's basically, you know, it's not warm and fuzzy. It's Google voicemail. So, and we have it that way for a specific reason, because that way when people want to make death threats to us, you know, they don't get that nice warm fuzzy feeling because they got to talk to me or a live human or something like
that.
They could freak out, right? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Oh, and I called. Okay, here's a Shauna hotline number. 520-344-0413. Again, it's 520-344-0413. And that's on the front page of Justice for Shauna Ford. I did call Pima County Court, Superior Court, yesterday, and I spoke to the head of security.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they do have lockers for you to stow your guns. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, so you can come and store your gun and then go into the courtroom.
That's right. They strip you naked darn near by making you go through a metal detector and being wanded. Almost everybody gets wanded. So on those days when I go that, you know, I'm recognizable as me, I'm just going to wear some body armor. And I'm going to carry my personal piece with me. And that
way,
at least, if somebody wants to shoot me outside the courtroom, you know, I might have a chance to shoot back.
Yeah, that's just wise. That's a good idea. Given the high value of the hatred against what you're doing, you know, the enemy is very enraged. And I think if we hadn't had this, what looks like a stage shooting down there, you know, with Loeffner or whatever his name was, I think Shauna's case would have been in at least in the regional media.
The Loeffner mass murder, a real mass murder, has totally eclipsed anything Shauna's accused of doing a year and a half ago. It's also kind of old news now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do know that Court TV is going to be down there, but I want to say something about death threats. I mean, I've gotten some of them, but, you know, I just don't take them too seriously, and I'll tell you why. When somebody emails you a death threat, you know, that kind of seems like kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They can't even deliver it in person. What kind of cowards are they?
Oh, there's a special kind of coward for that. That's a special kind of stupidly cowardly.
Well, I mean, I've had, after I burned the Mexican flag in Tucson, I got some nasty phone calls, and interestingly enough, the two of the guys who were instrumental in planning that with me, they both got death threats telephoned to their homes.
Sure.
And you know why? Because their phone numbers were findable.
Mm-hmm.
Mine wasn't. I had a voicemail pager.
There you go. Take the steps for precautions before you go out and do those kind of things.
Exactly. That's why I don't receive any mail at my residence, and my residential address isn't listed anywhere, because I don't want to make it easy for people to find me.
Right. I completely understand that. Yeah, it's just, if you're going to be involved in guerrilla tactics, you got to make sure you cover your trail. It's a good lesson to be learned there.
I want to say one other thing, if I may.
Sure.
I don't want to give myself too big of a pat on the back or the Committee for Justice for Shauna Ford, but I really think that if the jury selection is going well, I think Shauna can thank the committee and the fact that we've been keeping the pressure up consistently on the website, because we put up 11 reasons why Shauna Ford can't get a fair trial in Pima County. And I look at the website statistics. I know how often Pima County looks at the website, and it's getting to be more than once per day. And so they are definitely feeling the heat on them that, you know, we're drawing attention to the fact that Shauna can't get a fair trial in Pima County. And the thing is, it's time to kick out the jams and put the pedal to the metal. We've only got maybe three more weeks, maybe max six. to go. And so we are going to keep the pressure up on the website. Every post we put up there is dated, so you can see when it goes up there. But again, like I said, this is the only way you can use, we can use media to our benefit. You know, so maybe Shauna thinks she's getting a, an unbiased jury. Does it mean we should take off the website? Reasons why Shauna Ford can't get a fair trial? No. Up there, because we want to remind them. These people are evil, and evil does not like to live in the light.
No, it does not. The worst thing you can do to these corrupt, especially law enforcement people, is let them know that they are being watched. These little, what are the word I'm looking for? These little tyrants in their little villages, like Dipstick is. Oh, the worst thing that could happen to him is get the focus on him. But he doesn't even realize that. He's so stupid. He is wallowing in the attention right now. He's going to be ruined. His legacy is done. And I think it's just hilarious.
Well, we got to keep the pressure on them. We've got to keep the spotlight on them. If they're doing wrong, we have to expose that. I mean, we even put on the website, jury questioning and selection begins January 19th. Unfair trial set to begin January 25th. Mm-hmm. Violation of Sixth and Eighth Amendment rights.
Yeah.
We're just reminding people that we don't expect this to be a fair trial. And we're going to keep that up there until the trial is over.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, that's what it is. It's just keeping at it. Well, we highly encourage you. We our prayers are with you guys, and this is a venue that is open whenever we're on the air for you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your support.
Mm.
And if you could let all Christian militia people know that we would like them to pray for Shauna.
We'll do. We pray for her here on our prayer sessions and stuff like that. We make sure that people know about it, and I will continue to keep spreading the word from this microphone.
Thank you. The next 3 weeks are really critical.
They are, and we hope you keep us updated with what's going on in the trial.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dutch.
Okay, we're gonna thank you for calling in. Good night. Have a pleasant tomorrow, Elaine.
Thank you, Dutch.
Good night. Lou, go ahead. Let's take a little commercial break here. I need to gargle some water, and we'll be right back with a short second section. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm looking. We've got the regular group of people here. They're just spread out over two outlets. That's fine. Just remember, your financial support, your prayers are definitely needed. I need some special prayers for my health. I'm not going to go into it and be a whiner, but just be praying for my health. Those of you that know, you know I don't like to complain too much about that stuff. I make stuff up to complain about. But seriously, keep me going. I need your help. We'll be back after the break. And this song goes out to Shauna, our warrior behind the wire.
In the dark of early morn, British soldiers came running, breaking little homes away scorn. Hear the sobs of crying children, dragging fathers from their bed. Watch the scene as helpless mothers, watch the blood fall from their heads. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire.
Not for them a judge or jury, or indeed a crime at all. Being Irish means they're guilty, so they're guilty one and all. Round the world a truth will echo, Cromwell's men are here again. England's name again is sullied in the eyes of honest men.
Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire.
Proudly march behind our banner, proudly march behind our men. We will have them free to help us build a nation once again. On the people, stand together, proudly march on your way. Never fear or never falter, till the boys come home to stay.
Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Okay, and we're back, and I'm trying to do eight things at once. Hello, hello, hello. I am Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. We're coming in on a wing and a prayer tonight. We got broken computers, bad servers over at UBroadcast. Warlin just asked me a question. I don't know if you're listening right now. We had to switch to Ustream. Those of you tuning in late, we had to switch to Ustream at the last minute because UBroadcast crashed at 20 minutes till. So we brought up Ustream. We took down UBroadcast. UBroadcast is working. I see that Scotty is in there. Thank you, Scotty. And Scotty, I have not shipped your package yet. I've got it out and ready to go. We're just going to get some money in to ship it. I thought we had some to ship, but we didn't. It's going to be like $20 to ship it, but don't you worry about it. We'll get that transmitter sent out to you as soon as we can. So thank you for tuning in there, Scotty. When Ed, I think Ed will go in on UBroadcast first. I did send him an email, and I did send him a Facebook connection saying that what we're doing, so hopefully he'll pick it up. Hang on. Okay, good. People can hear us over there. Somebody on Facebook. I got another one from Moreland here. Okay, good. He is listening. We've got the usual group listening. They're just spread out over two systems, and we're going to see how this works. I don't know how much bandwidth this is eating up. We'll be able to tell tomorrow. We'll look at the percentage and see what it did. But maybe we'll do two of them for a while. Maybe we'll switch off of one. I don't know. I know it's a pain for you guys to listen, and I appreciate it. But we just got to stay up, and we got to do whatever we can do. And keep getting the signal out. Don't forget, today is Thursday, so Practical Christianity is coming up after the top of the hour, 6 p.m. our time. And we're going to be talking more about the Christian Separatist Covenant Community. You notice I keep throwing that word separatist out there. Separatist, separatist, separatist. We can't purify it from within, so we must, as Jesus said, run to the hills, liquidate our assets, turning it into survival. And we need to find a way to keep our faith, our families, our kin, everything going. What we're doing is based on faith, not on skin color, tone, or creed. Those folks that are listening, I know we have a lot of Christian identity listeners and stuff that listen to the replay because I get comments from you. We support your right to have your own free state. We just don't want it to be at the cost of other races, especially Christians. Just like we care about the Sudanese and the people in Africa and the Muslims that have converted to Christianity, we love all Christians. As the was the governor of Alabama?
Yeah.
Our sisters and brothers are Christians. Now, you Christian identity folks, you may say, but we're Christians too. Well, we disagree with you on that because the way you twist Scripture, that's just the way it is. I've argued with you guys. But that doesn't mean you don't have a right to exist. Just like we have a right to exist. What that leads me to is what I wanted to talk about next. Chuck Baldwin is just kicking butt and taking names. Chuck Baldwin, I got to get to the articles here. There's an article here from the Flathead Beacon, and I love that. Flathead Beacon from Kalispell, Montana area. And we told you we're big supporters of Chuck Baldwin. I said we don't know if he's the guy or not because he hasn't stepped forward. Well, now he's toying about running for governor of Montana. Now, when he was here, he said that if he ran, he would run as a Republican. But now he's saying he would run independent. Actually, Pastor Warren Mark Campbell met with the gentleman that's running on the Republican ticket for governor and got to speak with him, and he's a good man. But we would definitely support Chuck Baldwin over that. thanks, Warlin. I feel the love. But this article is amazing. Now, I get a lot of stuff from Chuck Baldwin. I don't always read it, but I do send it out. I assume you guys are already on his mailing list, so I don't want to bore you with time. But this is something that unless you were looking and we were perusing, I'm going to be honest with you. We were looking for jobs and stuff up in Montana to see if it was feasible for us to move up there and continue what we're doing here from there if we have to. I'm not leaving here, but it's always good to keep your back door open, right? And make sure there's a place to go. So I was reading their newspaper, and I'm like, Baldwin, there's a fight coming. Chuck Baldwin speaks during his Liberty Bell meeting to a packed house at the Outlaw Inn in Kalispell. I love that, Outlaw Inn. Now, Chuck Baldwin hasn't stated outright that he plans to run for governor of Montana, but in a speech to a packed room at the Outlaw Inn in Kalispell last week, he all but declared his candidacy, describing the prospect as so thrilling I just get goosebumps. Because so many people have asked me, I am seriously thinking about it, Baldwin said. There has to be a governor willing to put his life on the line to defend the Constitution. I can hear him saying that in my headphones. Baldwin, the 2008 presidential nominee for the National Constitution Party, described walking in the middle of the night and imagining himself as governor of Montana, writing a letter to the federal government, taking control of all the state's national parks, forests, and wilderness areas. I love it. Seizing back the land that the federal government has stolen within the state of Montana. You show me another guy that's running for governor that's willing to admit that and say that, that's his platform. Show me. Send me the information. I can't find anybody who's standing on that platform. As Montana's chief executive, Baldwin said he would also reject the federal government in the manner of Arizona's adoption of a strict and controversial immigration law, which is being challenged by the U.S. Justice Department. He would reject that. He would just say, no, we're going to do it. We need a governor who will do whatever Arizona Governor Jan Brewer did about whatever the issue is, Baldwin said. Draw that line in the sand, but then, this is where he differs from her, then take it to the next step and say, we don't care what the Supreme Court says. Where did you hear that? Did you hear Rush Limbaugh talking about that? Did you hear Hannity talking about that? No, you heard me talking about that. The night it happened, I said that Brewer should stand up and say, and have the ovaries and say, no, we don't care what you say, we're enforcing it. Well, now Chuck, who listens to this show, I'm told, and guess who told me that? Chuck Baldwin told me that. He listens to the show. He doesn't listen to it live. He tries to catch it when he can. So, Chuck, if you're listening, send money. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you for listening, and I'm glad that you're listening to our pastor and the doctrine that we put out on this radio show. That's what states have the power to do, he added. They have the power under God, don't you see? Just like those two sheriffs from our state that fought this outrageous communist national socialist weapons ammo ban, and fought it and won. But he's saying go even farther. Just say no, we're not going to let you do it. Now, Baldwin described other states, particularly in the Rocky Mountain West, eventually joining Montana in its fight against the terrorists of Washington, D.C. It is that struggle, he believes, is coming that prompted the former head of Florida's Moral Majority to leave the Baptist Church he led there for 35 years and move his family to the Flathead Valley several months ago. We know there's a fight coming. We know there's a line being drawn in the sand, and we want to be in the right place. I thought he said we don't want to be in the wrong place. The good ground is right here in Montana, and we want to be in the right place, he says. I agree with him. I can't go to Montana right now. God calls me to be here. I'm not going to be like Jonah and resist. I'm going to stay here. But those of you that can go, I highly encourage you to go. His remarks were met with thunderous applause by the more than 200 people who braved a frigid January evening to hear Baldwin speak. In the audience, there were several members of Kalispell's growing white nationalist community. That's why I'm reading this to you. Some of whom have been screening Holocaust denial and Nazi propaganda films at the public library over the last year. Also in attendance were members of the Lincoln County Watch, a Eureka group that meets to discuss suspicious government activity in the area. See, you know, they're there. We've got to understand that they're there. That's why I started talking about the CI guys, Christian Identity guys. Don't let them tank the movement. Acknowledge them. Keep them at arm's length. They're going to come to these things. They come here. We have outright Nazis come to this church thinking they're gonna do something here and harness our power and our synergy. We're polite to them, and if they don't leave, then we're not polite to them. So we've got to pray for Chuck Baldwin not to be tainted by these guys. They may throw money at him, they may throw votes at him, whatever. We just pray that Chuck Baldwin stays upright in Christ and doesn't bend to these guys. Now, the Lincoln County Watch in Eureka, that doesn't sound bad at all. I like those guys, but there are Nazis up there. I'm getting the emails from Nazis that are loving Chuck Baldwin, and that's probably one of the reasons they listen to the show, because we're a fan of his too. But you've got to know, we are not a fan of the white national socialist movement. We are Christian separatists, not white separatists. I'm going to keep flogging that dead horse. But the vast majority of the audience was comprised of curious, conservative Valley residents, many of whom are active in Tea Party-style groups like the Northwest Montana Patriots. Oh, I love the way that sounds. The event itself, titled Montana, the Tip of the Spear, was sponsored by a group called Flathead Liberty Bell. Before Baldwin's remarks, a member of the group, Dane Clark, presented a donated rifle to Damari DeRue, the Columbia Falls teen temporarily suspended after she unintentionally brought an unloaded hunting rifle to school in the trunk of her car. See, the schools are bad up there.
So she was suspended. So I love it. They replaced her rifle. Isn't that great? Unlike Deru, it's D-E-R-E-U, many of the audience were not from Montana. In fact, that appeared to confirm for Baldwin that like-minded people from all over the country were traveling to Montana due to a hunger and thirst for freedom. That's what Jesus Christ commands us to do. When he asked audience members to raise their hands if they are not originally from Montana, he estimated 60% of the crowd did so. See, God will set up these strongholds. Montana's obviously one. I honestly believe that we're one, and we're calling out to you. But just so you know it, Idaho and Montana are our fallbacks. A man in the audience shouted, "How many were called by God to come here?" I love that. Baldwin went on to state that being born in Montana does not necessarily make one a Montanan. There are a lot of people that were born in Montana but are not Montanans, Baldwin said. And there are a lot of people like me who were not born in Montana but have been Montanans our whole lives. Now, Baldwin arrived in Flathead, if you remember, in October. Now, real Montanans love freedom, he said. Real Montanans will fight and die for the principles of truth, honor, and freedom. And I would add, for all God's children. Over the course of his hour-long speech, Baldwin castigated the Republican Party for failing to overturn Roe v. Wade and outlaw abortion during 6 years when the White House and Congress went under GOP control. Hello, Pastor. Let me move my Bible here. He also described the church problem, blasting religious leaders who he said have become sheepish slaves of the state for failing to proclaim the principles of freedom out of fear of losing tax-exempt status granted to churches. Baldwin is beginning his own ministry in Kalispell called Liberty Fellowship that will not be tax-exempt so that he may address political topics from his pulpit. He also emphasized that whether someone is a Christian should not cause divisions among those girding up for the coming fight. Some of our biggest enemies call themselves Christians, Baldwin said. Some of our allies do not call themselves Christians. That may explain why he was speaking to white supremacists and stuff. We need to continue to pray for wisdom on that for him. I will fight alongside anyone who will fight for liberty, he added, and I will fight against anyone who oppose liberty, even if they call themselves Christian. And I agree with that. And I would say I would fight against anyone that would say you can't have liberty based on the color of your skin either. So those of you that are listening know who I'm talking to. Now, while Baldwin largely avoided any specific speaking broadly of infringements on concepts like freedom, his overall message was that the U.S. is dangerously close to collapse and some type of revolution is imminent. The days in which we live today are tantamount to the days of 1775 and 1776, he said. You don't have to be a prophet to see the handwriting on the wall, ladies and gentlemen. There's a song in there somewhere in that little phrase. We may have to get some of our songwriter friends to see what we can do. As for the national debate underway over violent political rhetoric in the wake of a shooting rampage in Arizona that killed 6 people and nearly took the life of a congressman, Baldwin said the incident is being used by the media to call for stricter gun control measures. I encourage you to go to our Facebook site. We've got this story posted and a couple other things by Chuck Baldwin. Go to ChuckBaldwinLive.com, ChuckBaldwinLive.com. We're going to be back after the break. I hope Ed's hooked up and figured out where we are today. We're all over the board. We're broadcasting on 2 networks today and 3 in a minute here on Liberty Tree Radio when we break for Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break.
Whenever we hear that glorious word, faith of our Father's holy faith, we will be true to Thee till death. Our Father's chained in prisons dark, we're still in heart and conscience free. How sweet would be their children's fate if they like them could die for Thee. Faith of our Father's holy faith, we will be true to Thee till death. Faith of our Father. then be truly free. Faith of our Father's holy faith, we will be true to thee till death. Faith of our fathers we will love, both friend and foe, in all our strife, and preach thee too as love knows how, by kindly words and virtuous life. Faith of our
when the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Okay, folks, it's time once again for Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell here from the Church at Kaweah, and we welcome our Liberty Tree radio listeners, our U broadcast stream, and our, what's the other one called now? Ustream? Mm-hmm. Is Ustream stream proper, Lou? Okay, so join in. Remember, there is a phone number if you want to call in with questions, and we got that working, 559-561-8225. 559-561-8225. I ask that you wait till we get the topic going and keep your questions to the topic and make sure you work your question up before you call in. And we've got about an hour here to discuss this. And what's the topic tonight, Pastor?
We'll be continuing with Christian communities versus Christian communes.
Great.
With emphasis at the end. So folks, if you're going to be interested or you know somebody that might be interested, we're at the end. We're going to talk about the importance of community and the militia.
Wow.
Because I know we've got a lot of militia-oriented listeners out there and the folks that are fighting the battle of liberty in that area. And so we're going to talk about the local community, a local community, and militias as we get towards the end. But I welcome everybody, the listening audience. I want a quick review of last week as
sure.
we discussed the difference between the Christian community and the Christian commune. It seems like today there's such a stigma to the term community that pastors who even suggest that Christians ought to live in close proximity to one another or sometimes were eyed as suspicious or even, that's a cultic thought to be living
yeah.
in, you know, community. But certainly we're going to see a couple verses from the Old Testament today where God's people have historically done so. You know, you can go to New York City, you can go to Chicago, and you see all kinds of communities. Especially years ago, you'd see the Polish community and the Italian community,
Irish
community,
yeah.
right. Jewish communities, they're
yeah.
very prevalent.
Everybody's been to Chinatown somewhere.
Yeah, everybody's been to a Chinatown. I enjoy going to Chinatown.
Yeah.
There's little Tokyo and Los Angeles. The one thing you don't see is Christian communities.
You don't?
Not anymore.
No.
Not anymore. So we've lost that vision for a community, and we want to recapture that vision. That's what I'm wanting to share with your listeners. And that a Christian community is not a Christian commune. Why don't we want to be commune? Because in a commune, the authority of a local priest over his household is negated.
Mm-hmm.
For example, every man is priest of his own household. We're priests unto God. The Bible says that the Lord has made us kings and priests unto God. And so we should have the sanctity of the home should not be disturbed. And in a commune situation, there is not the sanctity of the home is not preserved. That secrecy of home life, that importance of rearing children in the home by the hearth, by the fire, so
mm-hmm.
to speak, and the the devotions with the children that are so necessary. And just the authority structure is damaged. The priestly family authority structure is damaged in a commune setting. We talked about the fact that commune setting is applicable for a short time in an emergency situation. There's nothing wrong with sharing all things in common, and they did so in the book of Acts for a short time. But we looked at those passages in Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4, and we talked about the fact that that was for a specific period of time because, as you know, Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, property values were going to go to nothing, so those that believed Jesus Christ sold their properties in Jerusalem because they knew the value was going to go to
liquidated,
and then had money extra to live in common for a short period of time.
Sure.
So we do want to continue to probe this thought of Christian community, and let me do so by saying also we know that historically, Calvin in Geneva, he daily preached in Geneva, and the idea here is that there was a close proximity to avail them. People in Geneva availed themselves because they were close by him and they could hear his messages in Geneva. Early in America's history, church, school, and political assemblies all took place in the hall or the community hall they had built together for that purpose.
Yeah.
There was a sense of living among one's neighbors and being an important part of the community at large.
It's just common sense, you know. Safety.
Safety, right.
Security, friendships, you know, friendships, everything's right there.
Some values that we all share, should share in regards to, you know, the raising of our children, the discipline of our children. I like what my friend Pastor Thomas McConnell says. At what age does a young man begin to learn the process of courting? And that's at 3 years of age. A little boy. He sees it. He sees the adults. He sees the teenagers practicing honoring the young ladies and the girls and so forth. And so those things are done and shown and taught, I think, best in Christian community.
Understood.
Well, I'd like to share some new thoughts now. That's just by way of a quick review. I'm going to the book of Joshua, because this is practical Christianity. So we do look at the Word of God because it is the lamp to our feet and the light to our path.
Joshua.
So I'm in the book of Joshua, chapter 4, and I'm going to read tonight, Dutch, verses 1 to 7. Joshua 4, verses 1 to 7. And it came to pass, when all the people were clean passed over Jordan, that the Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, this is where God opened up the river Jordan, and Israel passed through. Take you out 12 men out of the people, out of every tribe a man, and command ye them, saying, take ye hence out of the midst of Jordan, out of the place where the priest's feet stood firm, 12 stones, and you shall carry them over with you, and leave them in the lodging place where you shall lodge this night. Then Joshua called the 12 men, whom he had prepared of the children of Israel, out of every tribe a man. And Joshua said unto them, pass over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and take you up every man of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean ye these stones? We're talking about, the Lord says, I'm establishing this, that there'll be a sign in these stones that people will walk by, and your kids are going to walk by and say, what's this stone? What's this pile of stones mean, Father? Then God says, you shall answer them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it passed over Jordan, the waters of Jordan were cut off. And these stones shall be for a memorial unto the children of Israel forever. So you say, what does that have to do with community and towns and villages? Mm-hmm. It's in the local communities where many of the monuments were established that we see. We can go across America today, and we could go to what? I could go to Lexington, Virginia, and you see a monument to Stonewall Jackson there.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so we go, and we still see these monuments that communities erected for many of the great godly men and women of time past.
Now, they did that in the past also. You don't see that a lot today. You'll see a street named after somebody or a building, but you won't see a monument depicting what that person is being memorialized or what that event is. I don't see it much anymore happening in current era.
No, it happens a little bit, but the problem is generally now when it happens, most of the time, like you say, that street, we had a street in the city of Fresno, not too far from us, was renamed, and now streets are being renamed Martin Luther King,
that's
Jr.
what I was getting
Highway.
At. That's exactly what I was getting at.
You know, what's some other one? Rosa Parks, this, or you know, things like that. And and you know, and they're taking there's the Roseanne Buich interchange here in California. She's a liberal,
and I don't know anything about her. I see the name
leader in California politics.
Yeah,
a left winger in California.
Even
politics.
If it's for a liberal cause, it's still not a proper memorial because it doesn't educate or enhance people who come across it.
So the idea is, why do we want to be in Christian community? So that we can vote in the town meeting and say, let's erect a monument that glorifies the Lord. That's the point. When we see a monument to Stonewall Jackson, a monument to Robert E. Lee, or to George Washington, it glorifies the Lord God who those men serve.
That's the difference.
And so that's why I started off with this passage in Joshua, is because communities then ought to be thinking about monuments that glorify the Lord. Now let's talk about and look at a passage here. I'm going to look at Judges chapter 1. Verses 22 and 23, Judges chapter 1, verses 22 and 23, and I want you to see another way in which communities now and towns can glorify the Lord. And this says in verse 22, in the house of Joseph, or the house of Ephraim, they also went up against Bethel. Hmm. And the Lord was with them, and the house of Joseph sent out to descry, that's an old English word for spy out. So they were doing reconnoitering Bethel. Now the name of the city before was Luz. Now Luz means it has to do with an almond tree. There must have been almond trees, a city of almond trees. But when Joseph took it over, he says, no, we're not going to call it Luz anymore. He says, we're going to call it Bethel, which means the house of God.
Yeah.
So what am I? So here's another way in which Christians, and the mark of Christianity should be throughout the land. It's like, you know, everybody is acquainted with historically in America, the steeple and the cross on top. That was, you could go any town in America. There's a church, here's the steeple, you know, on top. And so these are marks of a nation, of a land that is worshiping Almighty God, that is serving God, that understands covenantal relationships, even no matter how much brief they understand it or how greatly they understand it. And so these spires, these crosses, these steeples were a testimony of glory to God.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened sometimes in the Bible is men would take a town, take a city, and they'd rename it something that would glorify the Lord.
Yeah.
We have a lot of examples. I just wanted to give a few so that folks could understand where I'm going here a little bit more, bringing it to home a little bit more. In America, you have Bethesda, Maryland, big city in Maryland. Bethesda, well, that's a biblical word which means house of kindness. Beth is house. Bethesda, Maryland is house of kindness. Everybody would remember Providence, Rhode Island.
Right.
God is establishing this thing because Providence is another word for the deity himself, for God himself. We have Zion, Illinois. Zion, Illinois, Zion is another name for Jerusalem.
Oh, I haven't heard
that. So that was founded by John Alexander Darby back the early part of the 20th century.
So the people who live there, are they called Zionists?
I don't know. No. That's a good question. I only went to Chicago once.
Yeah, we got to find that one out.
But I know Zion, Illinois still exists, and maybe they are called Zionists, a different kind of Zionist. Yeah, that'd be a different kind. Yeah. And then, of course, the most classic, of course, is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could go on and on. Yeah, Philo, brotherly love, the city of brotherly love. So these names of communities, these names, and, of course, let's take a Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or Providence, Rhode Island. They're big today, but at one time they were just a village.
Yeah.
Just a little community. Just, you know, Bethesda, Maryland, which is a large city. Just a small little colony. Just a small little village.
Had to start somewhere.
They have to start somewhere. So we could glorify God in the naming of our communities if we began to take communities back.
So we should be thinking of a new name for Kauai, which is just a sound a crow makes.
Or meaning raven or black or raven, actually. Yeah, I think that Kauai, that's the best they can figure is Kauai means raven.
Yeah.
Certainly that would be something we could reconsider doing. Absolutely.
Elohim, California.
Something that would, and so we can, glorify God.
We'll have a contest.
We got to get more numbers before we can
begin to do that.
Or we have to purchase another piece of property somewhere.
Right, there you go.
But when we think about communities, there's two kinds of communities, just like there's two kinds of education. There's no neutrality in education, Dutch. If I asked you, because I've taught this many times, can we be neutral in teaching our children?
No.
No, we cannot. You immediately say, no, we cannot. Yeah. So our teaching, our education is either godly or ungodly. So, too, there isn't a middle ground for our communities. Our communities are either glorifying the Lord or they're not glorifying the Lord.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, all of us probably testify to the fact that we live in communities that aren't really glorifying the Lord. Now, there's lights within those communities, but the community as a whole is not standing as a beacon, a city set on a hill.
Yeah. If an apple's got rotten on it, it's a rotten apple.
It's got some issues with it, right.
Yeah.
And so we want to glorify the Lord and in our communities. I got a little thought here I want to project here.
Sure.
This is a little article on Lexington Concord. Everybody's familiar with, you know, the shot heard around the world. And it says here, on the very night of April 18th, 1775, so we're going back to, you know, April 19th, the very next day, that's where we have the shot heard around the world, but on the very night of April 18th, 1775, John Hancock and Samuel Adams were being entertained by Jonas Clark. Now, everybody knows the names John Hancock, and you know the name Samuel Adams,
mm-hmm.
and Jonas Clark was the pastor of the church at Lexington. When asked by his guests that night if the Lexington people would fight, Clark replied, quote, "I have trained them for this very hour." All right, so the preacher says, yeah, Lexington, the people of Lexington will fight. How did he know? Because Lexington was a town, a small town, and he was one of the key pastors there, and he knew that the people would fight because he had trained them, he said, for that very hour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're living in one town and I'm living in another town and the other militiamen are living in 20 other towns, it's going to be hard to get there, number one, and you haven't had the training of cohesiveness, you haven't had the esprit de corps, and you haven't been training regularly on the church green like they did back then.
Yeah.
So it says, when the first blood of the revolution was shed on the following day, April 19th, the men who fell were his parishioners. Upon seeing the slain, Reverend Clark observed, "From this day will be dated the liberty of the world." And of course it was. The patriotic preaching of the Reverend Jonas Clark had primed their guns. As most of the militiamen were members of his own church, Clark had seen to it that Sunday after Sunday they were exposed to the kind of patriotic preaching guaranteed to produce Christian soldiers. Let me ask the Christian audience out there, folks, are you listening to the kind of preaching that will produce a Christian soldier in your life and the life of your children? Are you doing so regularly?
Mm.
When the militia assembled at 2 a.m. that morning, the Reverend Clark was the first man to greet them.
Wow.
Why was he first? Because he lived right there. The parsonage, the manse was right there.
Proximity is everything.
Proximity is everything. And the fact, when they talk about the battle at Lexington Green, what the history books fail to say is that the Lexington Green was the church lawn.
It sure was.
They assembled right in front of the church, you know. And so all that's going on. Now, in Concord, I'm just finishing up on this article here. In Concord, that fateful day, the person to arrive in response to the call of the impending battle was the pastor of Concord, the Reverend William Emerson. Now, we hear a lot about Jonas Clark,
yeah.
But remember, Concord is where we actually began to defeat, numerically, we began to defeat the British.
Yeah.
Because we at Lexington, we actually sacrificed our lives, the lives of our men.
It was a stopgap measure. It was to slow them down.
Stopgap measure to slow them down. But it was also, they wanted to make it clear that it wasn't the colonials who made the first shot, but it was the British. Because
yeah.
they, at that time, I don't necessarily agree with this, but there was a doctrine from John Knox at that time, a Knoxian doctrine, that their blood must first be spilt, and then they could defend themselves.
Sure.
So that was a theology that was prevalent and with Pastor Jonas Clark. I don't hold to that theology.
Because they had already attacked. They were attacking. It didn't matter who shot first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree with that, too,
But
Pastor.
They wanted to make it very clear, so who fired the first shot? The English fired the first shot because the British at Lexington, not every other church, but Lexington and Jonas Clark under the John Knox influence, said that their blood had to be shed first, spilt first. Now they could defend themselves.
We never discussed that.
And we would believe that there is a biblical doctrine of preemption.
The fact that they showed up with guns and demanded you disarm is an act of war.
Is an act of war in itself.
That's enough right there.
I agree with you. So we understand preemption. But nonetheless, Clark was a good man. We love him. Just a little technical point there for the listeners. In Concord that fateful day, the first person to arrive in response to the call of impending battle was the pastor of Concord, the Reverend William Emerson. Having graduated from Harvard in 1761, he was a patriot long before April 19th, having served as chaplain to the Provincial Congress of Massachusetts in 1774 and was heavily involved in the activities of a committee of safety. He had previously preached at Concord the message, quote, "Arise, my injured countrymen, and plead even with the sword, the firelock, and the bayonet. Plead with your arms the birthright of Englishmen, the dearly purchased legacy left you by your never-forgotten-to-be ancestors." Now, let me read that again. That in those days, they had huge titles to their messages and to the book. So this is all a title of the guy's of this pastor's sermon. Quote, "Arise, my injured countrymen, and plead even with the sword, the firelock, the bayonet. Plead with your arms the birthright of Englishmen, the dearly purchased legacy left you by your never-to-be-forgotten ancestors." Now, so what's the point I'm making here? The point is, we always hear the Battle of Lexington and Concord, but it was the Minutemen of the town of Concord. It was the Minutemen of the town of Lexington that waged the great battle.
They were trained to be there. They didn't just show up. It wasn't just ragtag people going, okay, the call went out. There was the drum brigade, the people, the veterans, the elderly, the wounded showed up. The trained militia showed up because they were trained to do so. It wasn't just, hey, whoever can make it, make it.
Right. Excellent point. Excellent point. So what we're saying here is, if we contrasted any way of life, the biblical approach to any life, and we thought about the biblical approach to any area of life, the results would consistently be that the biblical way of doing things is so far superior to the ways of man that it becomes a declaration of war on the ungodly. Civil government for Christians to try to live by biblical standards. What are we saying? Christian community is a declaration of war on ungodly civil government, Dutch. Right. So if we have Christian communities, they immediately begin to war on the ungodly civil government around them in the other towns and cities and counties because you're a light, a city set on a hill.
Right.
Immediately it's
the nature
notice.
That you exist irritates the ungodly.
It's just like the towns we mentioned last week. Virgin, Utah, and Leverkin, Utah.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a guess here, but I'm going to say that their populations are maybe 100 people, maybe 200.
Yeah.
But they made national notoriety when they said these are UN-free towns. See?
Period.
So, we despise not the day of small things.
No, not
I'll tell
all.
You what.
It doesn't take a whole lot.
And it doesn't take,
a whole lot of leaven to change the whole loaf. I mean, we've got to remember those stories. There's a reason those are in the Bible. It's not just a recipe. You know, it's not good baking ideas.
Right,
It's
imperative. It's imperative. So small communities can offer real checks and balances as well. So the reason why we want to be in small communities is because there's accountability there. Just like me as a small town pastor, there's a greater accountability than say, your evangelistic multi-million-dollar evangelists who are behind gated communities, you know, with armed guards and so on and so forth, and very inaccessible. And we know that historically the strongest link in the chain of civil government is at the local level. So the power of a small community, that's where our strongest chain, that's the strongest link in the chain of civil government's at.
Sure.
It's not at the federal level. It's not even at the county level.
And it's the easiest to affect change in.
It's the easiest to affect change in, and it's the easiest to not only affect change, but once again, Dutch, to keep an eye out and see that things are done properly, correctly, and accountability. It's all at that.
Because when your leaders live next door to you, they're a little more likely to listen to you than 3,000 miles away or in a big mansion in Sacramento.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then within our community, we have, again, the individuals that have private property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we want to have the ownership of private property, and I know not everybody can, especially in the great state of California. Property, it's very hard. It's expensive here. It's not like living in some other states where it's much more easily accessible. But having property, you have something that also is it's something that is yours, that's God's given to you, and you really sense the need to fight for it. There's something that wells up and says, this is my property. This is my land. This is my community. You see, the New World Order is trying to destroy the concept of community, the concept of states. In other words, Robert E. Lee could not lift his sword against his native Virginia. You know, remember they offered him the commander of the Northern Armies. Right. He said, I cannot lift my sword against my native Virginia. Well, this is being slowly and ever so subtly taken away from people. Robert E. Lee was proud to be a Virginian. People were proud to be a Tennessean, you know, the volunteer state, whatever the case may be. I just heard you talking about Chuck Baldwin.
Yeah.
Already Chuck Baldwin says, I'm glad I'm a Montanan.
Right.
Right? And so there's this national pride. The football players of 20, 30 years ago, they played, let's say they played for the Oakland Raiders. I'm an Oakland Raider fan. That's
always
okay
surprised
if you listeners aren't.
Yeah.
All right. But and have been for many, many years. But I remember the time when the Oakland Raiders, those players, lived in the area surrounding Oakland.
Yeah.
See? And so there was they gave back to their community, the community of Oakland, because they lived there.
I remember NFL being that way when I was a kid in Denver.
Yeah. Exactly. Denver Broncos, same way. So in Denver, the Broncos that played for the team lived in Denver.
Yeah.
They contributed to
owned
the community.
Businesses.
Owned businesses. Yeah. And, yeah. And so we've gotten away from it as people fly here and there. So we don't have the point is we don't have the loyalty.
No.
I have a minister friend who's from the South, from Georgia, and he doesn't follow sports at all worth anything. But if he hears that the Atlanta Falcons are playing and he can't stand sports, it means nothing to him, he'll right away under his breath say, well, I hope the Falcons win.
I am the exact same way about Denver. I never watched football when I was in Colorado, but now I watch them.
Okay.
And especially when they play the Raiders. I have to admit that. I hated football when I was a kid, but now I watch it when I can.
So there's just a fact. It's a local loyalties.
Yeah.
The New World Order. Here's the point, folks. The New World Order is trying to break down local ties, local loyalties. Yeah. What happened with forced integration? It didn't work, but what were they trying to do? They weren't really trying to get a better education. They were trying to break down local loyalties and ties.
Right.
I can remember the first time I heard someone, we were getting books for the research center up here. This goes back back to the probably 97, somewhere in there. And I'll never forget, I was at the University of San Jose, and we were getting books. And this lady said to me, we were talking about, I forgot, we got into a little political discussion there. Okay, I have to be careful. I'm at a university and I'm getting books from them for free. They're discarded books that they didn't want. And she said, well, I'm a citizen of the world.
See, uh-huh.
It meant nothing to her to be in California or the United States. I'm a citizen of the world. Her local ties and loyalties had been broken down. What does that mean? That spells out she could easily fight for the New World Order. She could easily be programmed to slay American blood, and it wouldn't mean a thing to her.
Nothing.
Wouldn't mean a thing. We can take a break there.
Yeah, why don't we roll and take a break? We're talking about Christian covenant communities not being communal, but being based on Christian values, on Christian heritage. The concept of, and I'm going to use the term, Christian separatism to be a light to those non-godly villages. We're going to be back with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell right here on Practical Christianity on Liberty Tree Radio, Stronghold Radio. I don't know what we're going to call the Ustream yet, but we're reaching out. We're reaching more people every day. Thank you for your prayers and financial support, and we'll be right back with the pastor.
Fashioned against us will stand. God belongs to the Lord. We sing glory, honor, power, and strength to the Lord. We sing glory, honor, power, and strength to the Lord. The power of darkness comes in like a flood. Battle belongs to the Lord. You raise up the standard of power of His blood. Battle belongs to the Lord. Power of darkness comes in like a flood. Battle belongs to the Lord. You raise up the standard.
Crash does come when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest. The last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. And that music can mean only one thing. It's time once again for Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. We did the first half hour on Christian Covenant Communities. Now, I use the term separatist, Pastor. Is it okay for me to use that? Christian separatist.
In what way, I guess?
Well, like in the original colonial way that you're not going to purify a large city, so go find another place and try and collect Christians there.
Yes, you're talking about the separatists who came, the pilgrims in 1620 who landed at Plymouth Rock. They were called separatists because they had given up trying to purify the Church of England, and they said they were going to have Reformation without tarrying for any. That was a famous message by their founder, a gentleman, pastor by the name of Brown, or they were known as Brown. So in separatists in that sense, yes, absolutely.
Okay, so I'm okay to use that term.
That oftentimes we become separatists. I'll tell you another way I'm a separatist. I'm a separatist in that I've been a third party. I ran as a candidate for third party office a couple of times, and I 95% of the time support third-party candidates. So what I've said was basically both the Republican and Democratic parties, the Republicrats, as I call them, they're part of the problem, and therefore instead of trying to purify the Republicans or the Democrats, I've given up on them, and so I'm trying to work through third parties.
Okay, good.
So in that sense, I'm a separatist. But you still have Puritans, and many of my good Christian brothers and sisters, I differ with them, they're still trying to purify the Republican Party, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, change it back.
Or like public schools. People leave their kids in thinking their kids are going to purify.
Yeah, leaven it. Yeah. And I say, no, it's time to separate. Sure. So that makes us separate
in
that sense.
Well, we can keep on with your study plan here, but I just wanted to get that out.
Good little tidbit for the people. They probably enjoyed it.
Sure.
So we're talking about community and the land, and that there, folks, there's a God-given reward for our labors on the land. If you have land and you're working it, you can pray to the Lord and ask Him to bless it. I love, there's a famous painting of the husband and wife there. I think they're Dutch, and they're out in the middle of their field, you know, asking God. You can see they're praying for the blessing on their potato harvest or whatever. So in community, we get into the concept of biblical agrarianism. Biblical agrarianism is the understanding that we need to work the land. Now, that's not Amish. That means if I'm working the land and I got a tractor, man, I'll use a diesel-powered tractor any old day. If I'm cutting and clearing timber, I'm going to use a chainsaw. I'm not going to use a buck saw, a handsaw.
Sure. Okay?
So, but these are an important part of Christian life.
Right.
And we can use the concept of biblical agrarianism even for computers. So it's not saying, I'm not saying in any way get out of touch with technology.
Yeah, you're not a Luddite.
Use technology for the glory of God. But let's talk then for just a minute about the community and the militia. We talked about Lexington and Concord, and those were community or city militia, not even county. And I want to give you an example here of how the community and the militia kind of played out. Well, let me just first go back here for just a second and say, Dutch, you would remember a couple years ago, we found documentation here in Tulare County, California, of how you should be enrolled as a militia.
Yeah.
Folks, a few years ago, I've been, of course, involved in militia work since about 1998, a long time. But I began reading Black's Dictionary of Law. I read Webster's 1828 Dictionary, and I looked up the term for militia, and it said, someone who's enrolled for military discipline. Black's Law Dictionary said, someone who's enrolled. I said, well, if I want to be a true militiaman, I need to be enrolled somewhere.
Sure.
You know, where's my role? So I studied at the county. We went to the county, and in California, here in Tulare County, we were to appeal to the head judge of Tulare County, and get him to do an election for us. Well, make a long story short, we were denied. We tried to see a judge. We were denied being able to see a judge. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So they did not allow us to register with the county.
Right.
So where do we register? Because if you look at your historical definitions of militia now, it's somebody enrolled for military martial discipline. And so where could we do that? We could do it in the local community wherein we resided. That is historical, by the way, as well. And I have right here the roll book. It's actually the militia roll book. It's dated 1863.
That looks great. Dutch.
Yeah, I love having this.
That old-style, I don't want to call it calligraphy, but that handwriting.
It's just real fancy. And so the Lord was, we're privileged to have this actual roll book of 1863 for Wrightstown, Pennsylvania.
Hey, our Pennsylvania listeners, Wrightstown, is it still there? Let us know.
Yeah, that'd be great. And notice now, this is not the county. We're going to talk about that in a minute. This is the town. So this is the militia roll book, not for the county, but for Wrightstown. Let me just read a little bit to you. You are hereby required to furnish a roll to the county commissioners and also one copy to the brigade inspector of the proper brigade, the names of all persons in your district between the ages of 21 and 45 years. They're using 21 and 45 years. I have a copy, I may refer to it, of the Militia Roll Book or the Militia Statutes of Vermont 1819. Very, very old book.
And it's the same size. It's a pocketbook. It's something that they would probably carry in their uniform.
Exactly.
Kit.
This actually is an act regulating and governing the Militia of Vermont passed November 10th, 1818.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring that up, Dutch, is because they say 18 to 45 in Vermont. Here they're talking 21 to 45, so that we have liberty to make that date.
Yeah,
whatever date you want to use there, that's fine. All right, so that those that are to be enrolled, and it says, that you sign the said roll and append it an affidavit thereto, given under your hands and the seal of the day and the above year written. It has the names of the commissioners of Bucks County. All right. That was in the front. Now, in the middle of the book, you have the names. It's real simple of those that were qualified to be on the militia rolls. Well, let me just read you a couple of them to you. Here's Asa Atkinson, William Anderson, Timothy Atkinson, Robert Atkinson. So you see some family there.
Family lineage there.
Yeah. Edward, looks like Azure, George Blackfan, Simon Brooks, and on and on and on. All the names. There's about, it looks like about 40 names or so, something like that, on the roll book. Now, on the back of the militia roll book for Wrightstown, Pennsylvania, it says, the undersigned assessor of the township of Wrightstown in the county of Bucks. Okay, that's what I wanted to emphasize. It was the Wrightstown militia roll book, not just the county roll book, so that we in a community, wherever we were, we have the right to have our community militia. And so that's why this half hour we're talking about the community militia. And so it says here, Wrights Township, it says that that we made strict and diligent inquiry to ascertain the names of all persons required to be enrolled as liable to military duty by the laws of the United States residing in the district, that the roll hereunto annexed is as near as the deponent can ascertain a correct roll of all persons residing in said district who are liable to be enrolled, and it's signed by the Justice of the Peace here in April 1863 with a couple of names and the county assessor attending it to the fact of its legitimacy. So you have a roll book for a local town.
At a time when magistrates were just.
Absolutely. Certainly. And so you have then, as I mentioned about the Militia Act here for the state of Vermont in 1819, there's just a lot of pages how who's the adjutant general, who's the sergeant, and then they have the oaths. And, of course, their oaths are appealing to God, that God would help them and do the administration of their duties. So these are some of the things that a community can do and the authority that's wrought behind it. If you had a community and you had the register of those on the militia of that community, it would then be recognized by the county because government offices interface with one another, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas sometimes it's difficult to get justice from a person to the county office or the state office. It's a little bit different when it comes to a duly elected town mayor.
Aren't as many gatekeepers.
It's a lot simpler process. And I think that's one of the things that God should be calling us to. Here, I want to give you a little copy of a prayer book for a little militia. And this is not ours. This is from
Peter Hammond.
Peter Hammond in South
that.
Africa.
Yeah.
Here's what a chaplain could do here. And here's an example of a prayer for protection for the militia members. Almighty God, we look to you for protection. Protect us from bombs, landmines, artillery, and other weapons of the enemy. Keep us alert. Guide our footsteps. Keep us sensitive to your still small voice. May you cause the enemy's weapons to misfire.
I love specific.
Yeah, specific frame. And their bombs to miss their targets or fail to explode. May their pilots fall sick. May their Antonovs and MiGs develop engine failure. May they get lost. May every weapon formed against us fail to have effect. And that's actually from a scripture from Isaiah. It says, every weapon formed against you shall not prosper, saith the Lord. Protect us, we pray, in Jesus' mighty name. Amen.
Yeah, and, of course, that's from the Sudan. That's where that would be used.
Right, that would be the Sudan, the army in Sudan. The militia members there would be using that prayer and other prayers, of course, as well. So I want to encourage the listeners to think about the fact that how the militia could be so orchestrated if we lived in a community where that was encouraged and
Well, I
promoted.
I can't even imagine you wanting to start a town without a militia. I mean, how would you protect it? I mean,
you'd have your sheriff. You know, obviously you'd vote your sheriff or your policeman, whatever, police chief, whatever term you'd want to use. But obviously you'd want a little bit more than that right away.
Well, if there's a flood, if there's fire, a sheriff and two deputies isn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, I love Andy Taylor and Barney and all those guys, but you're going to need a militia that's trained in disaster preparedness, fighting things that can't be handled by your few firefighters and your few law enforcement. It's just common sense to have. Whether you want to call it a posse or whatever, it's all linguistics. But
certainly the militia could be deputized if they needed to form it to a particular function. And so that's the power of the sheriff to, you know, that's your Old West. You see it in the movies of the Old West. But it was something that really was happened. You could deputize, and a deputy then becomes a vicegerent. He's someone with authority to carry out a specific deed or mission. Mm-hmm. So the militia is local. The militia is called up, just like the Minutemen. They don't live too far away. They have their accoutrements. They bring them. They're deputized for a particular function. Or if you don't need to deputize them, if it's like you say a flood or an emergency, they're called. The church bell rings or whatever the case may be. Or in this case, we might phone them or whatever. Or call
radios,
them up,
radios, whatever. Yeah.
And they come to the aid of the citizens, because as we've discussed before, not on Radio Dutch, but you and I have discussed the fact that much of a militia activity is not with
confronting armed
individuals. It's protecting and helping and aiding the community members.
Life and property.
Yeah.
Protecting life and property from CPR to sandbagging.
Right. And so with most churches, we live in so many of our folks across the country live so far away from one another, it's difficult for them to come.
And that's our specific issue here. We have a lot of people from the valley that love us, but in reality, they're not going to be here when we need them. They're going to have to take care of their own hearth.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, and that makes it difficult. And so that's what we're just laying at our listeners to lay it before the Lord of where God would call them to serve, you know, in a community somewhere. Or we want people like you may talk about the fact, Dutch, where you just found a town for sale up there in
Wakanda,
Washington. This would be a good time to bring it up. So folks, be looking. Despise not the day of small things, God told the prophet Zechariah. Despise not the day of small things. I know you, most of the listeners, and we don't hardly have any money. You don't have money, but God can do great things. So don't be afraid to look. Find out about a piece of property that maybe can be divided up very easily. You know, you might purchase, or 200 acres could be purchased up and then divided up, or 100 acres could be purchased and divided up, and then you begin the beginnings of a town or community.
You've got your zip code, you've got your known place, post office, you know, there's a way to go. I know a lot of people don't like zip codes and stuff, but there's a lot of power that comes with that, too.
There's some recognition, civil recognition.
Yeah,
that's why, as long as Cahuilla has a zip code, there's recognition from the civil magistrate concerning Cahuilla.
Yeah.
So tell them about Wakanda.
Well, Wakanda was a little town. I just searched. I put on Google, because the pastor asked me to do this, because he had mentioned an older story where he'd missed out on a community. I think we mentioned that last week. And so I wanted to see if there were any more towns for sale. And there are lots. There are lots. I just Googled towns for sale, small towns for sale. And I found this little community that has like a store, a post office. I think it had a school or a church and some residential houses. And it's just a small little area, but it's a place. It's a place to go. It's on a main road. And I checked why they're selling it. The lady who's living there is just getting too old to take care of it. She's dropped the price from $1 million to about $490,000, I think it was. It's been for sale for over a decade.
Oh.
Yeah, and, you know, just with the economy. But I found other towns that were, you know, $50,000. I found a lot of towns in the Rocky Mountain region from Colorado North. I wouldn't go south of Colorado in my search.
Okay.
And some of them are just ghost towns. Some of them are already built-in economies with tourism and mining.
Oh.
So you said agriculture. You know, maybe if you're looking high in the mountains, you're not going to have agriculture, but you might have mining, gold right now. Find an old gold town. But I found a lot. North Dakota, South Dakota. We were talking, North and South Dakota are begging people to move there to increase their voters.
Yes, yes.
So you may find little towns that you can't buy the town, but they may be a good little Christian town that are looking for people. So as being a diligent Christian, I just thought, you know what, Pastor, I'm going to look it up. And I got real excited. And Stacy was like, what are you doing? I go, look at this town. I found half a dozen towns, and that was the best one I found. That wasn't a true ghost town out in the middle of nowhere. It was on a paved road that people, and you even said you knew people that would vacation there.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. No, the town of Wakanda, I've never been there myself, but a number of friends used to like to go out there. They owned cabins, that sort of thing. So what we're trying to do, what's the essence here? We're looking at what is the best way that we can leaven and influence society. What is the best way that I have seen after 15 years in this movement, what we would call the Christian Patriotic Movement, and seen many things, many of the law movements come and go, many of the different concepts and different things come and go, but what is the best way that we can probably take this country back? And that might, I believe, is one community at a time. But we have to live in community. We have to concentrate our firepower.
Yes.
With one person living in one city, another person living an hour away, another person living a half hour away, another person living 10 minutes away. We're out there. I give the illustration of concentrated firepower. When I used to go to Front Sight, and you went with me, Dutch, a time or two, they would give a demonstration in the practical rifle class. We'd be shooting for 3 days. We're shooting at our individual paper targets.
Mm-hmm.
One man is shooting at his individual paper target. But on the third day, they have what they call a night shoot. And they allow, and then there is steel targets that you can hit. And they allow all 15 or 20 students, however many on the line, to focus, and it's at night, all their concentrated firepower on two targets.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you see those two targets being lit up. The night, as the sky is actually lit up with all the sparks flying.
Yeah.
15 or 16 men are shooting, concentrating their firepower on two targets. Well, to take that further for us practically, when I go to the county and appeal if I need help or need help for something, it's one man. And sometimes as pastor, I can, pastor of the church, I can, have a little bit of influence because it's a church. But generally, I don't have that kind of influence. But if it was at a small local level...
Stand by. Okay, let's see. Who's calling and what's your call? Yes, what's your question?
Oh, hi.
Yes, this is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. Do you have a question?
It's Anthea.
Anthea, you know not to call when I'm on the air. You have to call back after 7, okay?
You have a question for Pastor Anthea?
Yeah, were you listening?
No.
Okay, call me back after 7, okay, sunshine? I love you.
Okay,
love you too. Bye. I love it when that happens. Let's pass the headphones back. That is just fantastic when that happens, but I didn't mean to break your stride there, and I apologize for that.
No problem. We're talking about that at the night shoot when 15 or 16 people are concentrating their firepower on two steel targets. You see the power resonant within those individual weapons that as one weapon, it's okay. But 15 weapons turned on two targets, it's devastating.
Same concept taking down an aircraft or a rotary wing aircraft. They taught us in the Army. You get your whole platoon firing at that rare rotor, they're going to get out of the area real quick or go down.
Okay.
But one guy plinking at it's not going to have an effect.
Yeah. And so this is what we've seen. You know, we got some, you know, and myself included, man, I've been working in this thing for 15 years, trying to leaven society at the county, trying to do this, trying to do that. And God honors our efforts, but maybe God's also saying, look, would you go back to the book, would you go back to the playbook and see how my people concentrated themselves into towns and villages and how I blessed them in that and how they took back from the enemy towns and cities, and they had to do so with a certain synergy, a certain amount of men. It's like Abraham when he won back his nephew Lot. You know, it says he took his, I think it was 200 trained and armed servants. He had trained them himself in military tactics to get back his nephew. So we need to have enough synergy, enough people to make a difference where one or two people here and there, I think we should just see. You know, there's a saying that says if one of the marks of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yeah.
And this is one of the problems I have with the Republican Party is people think that every year, every 4 years, by nominating or getting a Republican president in, things are going
to
change.
Well, Chuck pointed out they had 6 years to get rid of and fix everything, and they didn't do anything.
So to me, that's a point of insanity. They keep from voting in these Republicans, and very little is going to happen. That doesn't mean to say that, you know, the new crop of freshman congressmen, there won't be some good things. But by and large, you know, historically it hasn't happened. So if we can concentrate our firepowers, if we can be open to the Spirit of God, where can we go and have 10 families or 5 families or 20 families or something like that influence and leaven the society around them, it will probably be in these smaller areas or developing a new town or taking over a very, very small town, not trying to take over a city of 100,000 people or 50,000 people.
Yeah. And let's be honest, those cities are rash with crime. They're already run by liberals usually because that's where the money is. That's where the liberals go, to the bigger towns. And your smaller towns, I found, even if they've got a liberal entity, there's still a predominantly conservative voter base.
Yeah, there generally is. And in a small town, and especially if you're starting your own town, if we tried to, for instance, we tried to take just a major city, and you even had the people to do it, and I'm not talking about a military action here, I'm just talking about through people, the amount of bodies.
Grassroots.
All the zoning restrictions, all the restrictions of laws to do, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, would fight and against that which we're trying to do, our assembling together, all kinds of things. Having an area where we could meet together, whatever the case may be. But if you take some fresh, virgin land and you divide it up, you don't have any zoning issues. Mm-hmm. Or if you go to some place that's out in the middle of Timbuktu, so to speak, you don't have to fight against all those zoning and regulations.
You're not
going to
have a neighbor city going, hey, wait, you can't be doing that over there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you just start doing it. And by the time you've got everything up and established, the county's like, uh-huh.
You know, and so you're there and you're a legitimate person to be dealt with.
Well, some technical stuff here. I see Scotty just came in. I know we went down our new broadcast. This will repeat here when we stop here in a few minutes. In about 7 minutes, we'll be done, and it will repeat here. So you will be able to get the entire program again. Praise the Lord that you stream is working much better than you broadcast. I guess he answered my prayer. I didn't know which one to use now. I think you stream is going to be the new one. So thank you, Scotty, for coming in there. Now, we've discussed a lot of this stuff. We've discussed, all the basics, all that kind of stuff. You went to Montana.
Yes.
And you saw that stuff. What is your opinion, and I don't mean to be putting you on the spot. If you don't want to do this now, that's fine, of Chuck Baldwin going to Montana and waving the rally flag versus what we're doing here in California? Because everybody tells me California's a lost cause.
That's an excellent question. First of all, I appreciate what Brother Chuck has done there. I back him 100%. He said he and his two sons and his son-in-law spent about 2 years looking at all the states, those that were considered the Granite State, the Live Free or Die State, looking at them all, and they felt that Montanans per capita have the greatest segment of true patriots and patriotism than any other state.
You can't really argue that.
So they chose the state of Montana. To 11. Now, he's going at it a little bit differently than I would, in the sense that he's trying to go a little bit more top-down in the state of Montana.
Governor.
Yes, and, in thinking of governorship and a race like that, I would say I would be inclined more to do it a town at a time. But there's nothing wrong. He would be behind any effort that I would do in a town level, and I would be behind any effort that he would do at a statewide level.
See? His synergy's different there than we have
here. And he has a following that's much bigger than ours, and so he has an ability to leaven because of his name recognition quite a bit more so. But, I still would be if he entered in a third-party race, it would be an extreme long shot. Long shot. And I don't know, but what he'd be better off trying community first. Start as mayor of a community first. I really think so. I have not given up on California. I feel the Lord has me here for a reason. I'm not going to go into that right now, but the details of my life as to why God has put me here when he has. I have looked at moving out of state myself. Willing to do so. Folks, I was willing to do so a couple of different times. And the Lord seems to have supernaturally said, in the dimension of the miraculous, has me here. But I'm still open. There are times when I may feel free in my spirit to move another direction. Just currently, I do not have that freedom. But the point that we all should have that attitude that we're looking, we're working toward. One reason why I think the Lord has us here too is because of the amount of land that we have, the fact of just in terms of raw survival. It's the climate here is better than just about anywhere you're going to find.
Yeah, you can't argue with it.
Yeah, you can't argue. It's you can grow crops,
year round.
You can grow crops basically year round, and then you have water access, which you don't have in some of the northwestern areas and the desert communities, so on and so forth. Even though their desert communities are
water's
remote.
Not an issue here.
Water's not an issue here. Yeah, there's a
which it is 80% of the rest of the country
that we can do. But what I want to do here is, how much time? We just got a couple minutes?
We've got 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay, 4 minutes. When we got about 2 minutes left, I want to read something to the listeners here to just kind of wrap it up. But yeah, we should be looking. God has not given up on the United States. That was something we preached. We talked about in a couple of sessions back for a couple of weeks, having a positive outlook on America. But how can we best influence and leaven America is a good, legitimate question. But I'm not entertaining the question of it's too late for California or it's too late for the nation. Now, you probably talked about in the first hour, did you talk about the good news in California, the overturning of the ammunition law?
No, I didn't get into it, but our listeners do know I sent out a press release and told everybody.
So good things can happen.
Lots of good things
in California. And one of the good things of the election in California was the fact that the gerrymandering of all the districts is going to change through a commission. They're going to make it much fairer. So that every Republican and every Democrat in a district, state district, Senate district, is going to be drawn up fairly like it should be, so that every opportunity, it could go either Democrat or Republican or third party every
the
vote.
The cities were holding too much power.
Yeah, and so that's a good thing that California's put in. So who knows what will happen, and you know as how that plays out. But let me just read something to you here from Thomas McConnell. He has a Christian community out in Rayville, Missouri. For any of you that are out that direction, look up Pastor Thomas McConnell in Rayville, Missouri. It's called the Village of Rayville, and he'd be glad for anybody's help out that direction.
We got a link to that on the website, Lou.
He says, the go-it-alone, this is what I'm trying to drive at, folks, the go-it-alone, impersonal lifestyle of today has had a devastating effect not only upon the churches of our nation, but especially families and individuals. You know, there's some Lone Rangers out there that in your listening audience, Dutch, I imagine, they don't go to church anywhere.
Right.
They don't. You cannot claim the authority of Jesus Christ in your life if you don't recognize the authority in his local church. Now, the authority of Jesus Christ doesn't not only reign in the church at Cahuilla, but it's not exclusive. We have the authority of the Church of Christ here, Jesus Christ, but so does every other local church that preaches and believes the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
But we have many Lone Ranger mentalities out there that do not submit to the authority of Christ's church anywhere, and they become rebels in the kingdom of God. So he says, the go-it-alone impersonal lifestyle of today has had a devastating effect not only upon the churches of our nation, but on especially families and individuals. Though there are millions of Christians regularly attending services, Bible studies, prayer meetings, etc., so many of them strive alone when it comes to living out their faith. That is, they do not work out their salvation together with fellow believers in the context of Christian body life, but alone in the autonomous world of their own thoughts and fears. There are many reasons for this. For some, it is a matter of personal embarrassment or pride, where they do not feel free to really share what is going on in their lives, out of fear of rejection, ridicule, or commendation. Others, having been abused by tyrannical authority or deeply hurt by fellow believers, withdraw into bitter worlds of disappointment and heartache. For others, the shallowness, corruption, and hypocrisy of the churches have driven them into isolation. I understand those things, folks, of the hypocrisy and the corruption in churches, but that's no excuse for assembling of yourselves daily.
Mm-hmm.
There are many others simply who do not care to be a part of body life out of a heart of rebellion that prefers autonomy. Don't be in that position, folks, where you just like to be out there and be a lone wolf or a lone ranger. That's a position of rebellion. We all have many experiences along these lines, just as the early saints did in the time of the Apostle Paul. The temptation to insulate or isolate oneself from our responsibilities and calling to body life has been there since the beginning of the church. God is faithful to provide a way of escape from sinning in these matters, as he does in all matters. That's a close quotes of Thomas McConnell. So I'd like to just, my final thought, Dutch, I'd like to leave with your listeners, is consider Christian community as a way to glorify the Lord.
That's right. I don't see any other solution for me, personally, than being with like-minded folks. Because, you know, we can use all the cliches, iron sharpens iron, but when it comes down to it, where the rubber meets the road, we need each other.
Practical Christianity.
And we are taught in the Bible to be in fellowship with other Christians, period.
Accountability is a big part of Christianity.
Can't go live on a hill. Well, folks, you've heard it. This has been another episode of Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell from the Church at Cahuilla in Cahuilla, California. And you can find more of these teachings at www.thechurch@cahuilla.org. I know it's a mouthful. Go to dutchjones.info. You're there already. You're listening. Go just scroll up. Click on the links, and you will be able to find more of the sermons, more of the teachings. Now, I apologize to all of our listeners that were expecting you broadcast. It crashed over and over again today. I think the Lord gave us a message. We're switching to Ustream. We're switching to Ustream. So just come here to dutchjones.info tomorrow to hear the show here. Register with Ustream. It's free. It's totally free. You don't have to pay anything to listen. Don't get scared. It's just another way for us to bring you the message, and it is obviously better quality, and it'll save us a few dollars too a month. So thank you for all you do in the holy cause of liberty, and remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord alone. God bless you.